Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 80. That's right, we were just kicking around the notion that we're 20 shows from 100. What will we do on episode 100? We have no idea, just to give you some kind of clue that it's too far away. Joining me this week, as always, is John.
Hey everybody, how you doing?
I always sound like you're trying to sell me a car or something when you say that. It's so professional sounding.
I could sell you a car if you wanted.
What's the shipping charges from St. John to California? I think I might be able to get a little better around here, but I'll keep you in mind. also joining us, as per usual, although he'll be gone next week, we're thinking, is Patrick.
What is going on, people? Episode number 80, do a barrel roll.
Nice. Well, that's right, you picked that up today, huh?
Yeah, got it yesterday. Or I think it was yesterday. It's all a blur.
So you've had some time to play it then?
A little bit, yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, then why don't you kick off what we've been playing and tell us all about Star Fox on the 3D screen.
All right. Star Fox 64 3DS or 3D or whatever they call it. Very faithful remake, redo, whatever, in terms of level design and the sound and the music. Although I guess the voices are definitely a bit different from the original game. I don't know. I think they re-recorded them or did something weird. Slippy is just as annoying as always, and Falco's the pompous ass, so they still fit right in. No big deal. A little different sounds. Well, for those of you who don't know what the heck Star Fox is, where have you been? You know, it's a fast-paced action flight. Simulating, not really simulating, more arcade-type game, where you're a fox, and you're piloting a spaceship, an air wing, whatever, and, you know, all over the place. Sometimes you're even in a submarine, sometimes you're even in a tank. You're picking up bonuses, going through rings to power up your craft, giving you more shields, stuff like that. Anyways, the single-player game has two modes to it, just like the original. The most used mode, or the mode that you'll be playing the most, is the classic, I guess you can call it, on-rails version of Star Fox, taken directly really from the original Super NES Star Fox game, Star Fox version. This mode, you got lots of action, lots of things to avoid, and lots of, especially in the 3D, it's even harder, you know, places to fly, bad guys to shoot. The other mode, of course, is called Free Range mode, which basically is as it sounds, full freedom of movement on a map. Basically, they restrict you to an area mostly. It's like a map, a multiplayer map almost, only it's not. definitely not on rails. You can do all sorts of loops and U-turns and complete freedom of movement. Not as much action going on during this. There's usually like big dog fights and stuff like that, but there's less enemies after you and stuff like that. Both modes are good, you know. You can really concentrate on shooting and power-ups and stuff like that in the on-rails mode or the classic mode. Pretty fun game, as it always has been. You know, it looks very slick in 3D. That's the big difference, is the visuals, really, and the fact that it's portable. But looks really good. I'd say it's the best 3D visuals, the most three-dimensional that I've seen thus far on the 3DS. You know, Zelda looked great, but it was very subtle. I like to say Zelda's kind of like Avatar, the movie. It wasn't in-your-face 3D. This one's a little more in-your-face 3D, but it's not done in a tacky way. It's done quite well. You know, overall, the visuals are quite improved over the N64 version, even if you're going to turn it into 2D mode and check out the differences. More so improved than Zelda was, really. There's a lot of little things like the water reflections and even the textures, stuff like that, a lot better. But it's hard to compare unless you had the original right beside you or if you played the original, even all those years ago. Back to the game, the single-player mode has branching paths, you know, so that helps keep the single-player fun in different ways. You know, the single-player, each level seems a little shorter than I remember, but I'm sure they're not shorter, it just seems that way. So it's nice to have the branching paths. It's also nice to you go back and get better scores on each level, and you can get awards for that and stuff. So there's quite a bit of replay value. I haven't beaten it yet because I only played it really last night, played through it. There's a training mode. I found at first the training mode to be a little hard in the 3D, but I guess it's good to have it. It's almost like going down a trench in the Death Star, this training mode, and it helps because when you throw it into 3D, it takes a little more, patience, or a little more, patience, a little more learning on how to actually, when there's an obstacle that's in 3D, how to go around it without actually hitting it. So it's pretty cool. So far, so good. I definitely recommend it. I think it was $39 here. Might find it cheaper somewhere else. I just grabbed the first one that I saw. Pretty good price. Multiplayer, I've not tried it yet. This is the only thing that's a little disappointing. And it's a little disappointing to see that for some reason, maybe the coding, maybe laziness, that it's only local multiplayer. Which is a bit weird considering games on the original DS, like Mario Kart, for God's sake, had very smooth multiplayer online on the old DS. So if you could, if you could do that in the older technology, why didn't they do that now? I know that Mario Kart 3 DS and Kid Icarus are both going to be online multiplayer, but this one really would have been pretty fun online multiplayer. I'm not sure why they decided to do that. But, you could still play with bots if you can't find anybody local to play with, which I probably hardly ever will. So playing with bots should be fun. I'll check that out and get back to you guys on that whenever I come back in a few weeks. But right now I've been concentrating on single player. It's a very good game. If you've never played it before, I think you're going to really like it. If you have played it before, it's quite fun. The 3D is really good. So there's my take on Star Fox 64 3DS. Speaking of 3DS, of course, Ambassador Patrick has downloaded yet another one of his free Ambassador games of the week. This time I downloaded Ice Climbers. I think that's what it's called. Is that what it's called, John? I think that's what they call it. Now I can't remember. Hello?
Yes, it is. Sorry. Mute. Oh, it is Ice Climber. Right. Yeah, it's the original, kind of arcade one?
Yeah.
Is it 3D?
No, this one's not 3D. It's interesting, okay. They have done a few in 3D. Excitebike, that was free. That was another free game, actually. Before the Ambassador problem. I just like saying Ambassador. But, that one was... There's another one, Xevious, or however you pronounce that. That's also in 3D, but that one costs money. So, if I'm getting all these free games, it's going to be a while till I pay for anything. But, Ice Climbers... You could tell I didn't really remember the name, so I haven't played it before. So it's kind of neat, in a way, to download a game that's, a classic 8-bit NES game that I've never played before. It's a pretty fun game, little action-slash-platformer game. I've only played it two or three times. It's fun, and I'll return to it. It's kind of cool, but on the other hand, it really shows its age, and I don't have that, attachment, I guess, that I would have with retro titles I played in the past, like a Zelda or a Metroid, Donkey Kong Jr. There's something there, it's hard to explain. It's just, if you've played them in the past and you've enjoyed them in the past, even if they're old and even if they're simplistic, you like them better. This is an example of a game, I like it, it's fun. But I didn't play it back in the day, so I don't have that same, whatever you want to call it, retro attachment. I can't think of a better name for it. Maybe you guys can, but it's pretty fun, though. So that's my retro title for this week. I'm sure there'll be more in the upcoming weeks because I'm milking this thing to death. What else did I play? Oh, yes, another flight-type game and simulator action game on Xbox Live Arcade. Now, if I remember properly, my memory's shot today, and it must have fallen on my head. Ace Combat, a new Ace Combat game. I think it's called Assault Horizon or something like that. Maybe I'm getting the name wrong. Brand new. It's on Xbox Live Arcade, probably on PlayStation Network, and maybe even on PC by now. Pretty cool. I've always liked Ace Combat, but never enough to buy the game. It was always something, And I think what that something is I kind of sucked at the demos, and I thought, well, if I suck at the demo, maybe I'm going to suck at the game, and I don't want to spend money on it, $60. I found it difficult a bit, I guess. The difficulty was a little high. Maybe it was just not enough variety for me or for an entire game of just jet fighters. Well, I'm guessing I was not the only one to, out there to have these kind of feelings because I have these kind of sentiments about the franchise because it seems to me that this new version has both an easier difficulty and variety, really, you know. The developers seem to have, they're trying to maybe attract more buyers or different people into doing it like me. There's a helicopter level now, or helicopter levels. The demo has a helicopter level. A lot different than the jets. Man, I'm tired today. Than the jets, obviously. I mean, it's a much slower speed. You can actually stop and hover. Although I must say I don't recommend that. I got shot down every time I stopped for more than 5 seconds, so I guess that's kind of realistic when you should be circling around these enemies, not stopping at them when they have missiles. But yeah, definitely cool. It's a different style and a different aspect to the fighter jets. Slows things down a bit. Pretty good for, you know, I like that about this new Ace Combat demo. Also, the jets are back, of course. I mean, that's the bread and butter of Ace Combat. Now there's an interesting mode, a dogfight mode. It's optional for players basically like me. That kind of sucked, I guess. when you're in close range, you can push down on two buttons. I forget what it is. The demo tells you, so it doesn't matter. And it enters into what's called dogfight mode. I believe that's what they're calling it. You know, it's for people who want to concentrate more on shooting down the plane and less in crashing into the ground. I found some of the close combat in other games, I'd be concentrating on shooting that dude down and then I'd hit a skyscraper or something, right? This is a little less, I don't know, a little less dangerous, a little more autopilot, I guess. It's optional, so the people who loved Ace Combat, who are really good at it and who think, you know, oh, why do I need dogfight mode? Well, it's kind of fun. It's more arcade-like. But if you're an expert of the series and you don't want any change in your video games, once again, you don't have to do it. You actually have to push two buttons at once to enter this easier arcade mode. I like it. These two changes to the series, the variety of vehicles or whatever you want to call it, and the kind of easier arcade mode that you can switch back and forward to, the dogfighting mode, when you're close enough to an opponent, I mean, that's enough to get me definitely interested in maybe getting this at a discount price or, you know, when it's reduced. It's coming out in November, which, yeah, you know, the Gears of War, the Star Foxes, the Halos, and the Battlefields are all coming soon. So I don't know if I'd buy this game, even though I'm interested in it. But definitely check it out if you're like me and you liked Ace Combat, but you're always a little maybe intimidated by how fast-paced it was. Anyways, that is basically all that I can remember, at least, that I was playing this week.
I loved Ace Combat 3 and 4, because with a flight stick, you could literally go inverted, and for some reason, the little Twitch kitties and this and that could not hit you when you were inverted. So you would almost do the Top Gun thing, which is theoretically possible in a fighter jet, but most fighter pilots will tell you don't want to try it, that you would just slow your airspeed down to the point where they'd fly by you, flip back over, and blast them.
Yeah, cool.
By the way, you aren't as tired as you thought, because you nailed the name just right. I got it right here. It's Ace Combat Assault Horizon, which is also Ace Combat 6. The demo... Do you play the single player or the multiplayer demo?
I didn't even know there was multiplayer. I'll check that out. I played the single player demo of the jet and of the chopper. There's two separate little demos, I guess.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe there is only a single player demo. I thought I saw.
There might be. Maybe it'll be coming out later, or I don't know.
I thought I saw something here about multiplayer as I was scanning through this article, and I was incorrect. I'm not seeing it now. Yeah, I'll be interested in the helicopter stuff, because I loved Apache AH-64 Longbow, the helicopter battle simulator for PC way back in the day.
Wow.
Great game. Fun. One of my favorite levels that got it really right in Medal of Honor was the helicopters. I mean, that was more first person. You know, you had less control. You weren't flying. I mean, you were doing the shooting. And I actually enjoy flying helicopters more. I'm okay with the jets if I've got a good flight stick. But like you said, they're so fast that you just, a lot of times you don't have time to think.
Yeah.
You just kind of go and do what you need to do. You know, the helicopters, you at least get a little bit more time to think. Yeah, holding still is usually not a good idea because they move so much slower. You know, their side-to-side movement is so much slower that by the time you think about it, they're still targeting you and you're pretty much boned. So, that's cool. I'll have to check that out when I get a few minutes to see what I think of it, especially the jets. It'll be weird playing it. That one, that might be one where you get to make fun of me, you know, or the keyboard mouse thing that I always make fun of you with. Playing that with an Xbox controller might be a little odd for me because I'm used to doing it with a flight stick. So that could be a little interesting, or I could figure out a way to pirate my flight stick onto my Xbox 360 because I've still got an old ancient one from the Battlefield Desert Combat mod days. So, John, what have you been playing this week?
Before I jump in, I wanted to talk to Pat a little bit more about Star Fox. Pat and I were talking about Star Fox a little bit on the Xbox Live text chat, and I mentioned how the commercial for Star Fox was pretty funny. The guys are getting really into four-player and multiplayer and really giving it to this one of the guys. It's pretty good. But what I find interesting is that there isn't the multiplayer is local like that. I mean, I had a couple of years ago, I had Star Fox Command, and there was an online multiplayer over the Wi-Fi component of that. Like you could do the dogfights against other people. I'm kind of amazed that there isn't any Wi-Fi multiplier on this one.
I agree 100%. That's why I'm thinking maybe they just, I don't know whether it was a last-minute decision or something to do with the coding or whatever, but I agree. I mean, like I was saying, Mario Kart last gen, and you just brought up Star Fox Command.
Yeah.
They had some sort of online multiplayer, and I remember playing Metroid. Oh, what the heck is that called? Hunters, that was it?
Hunters, there, yeah.
Yeah, Metroid Hunters on the, it was an okay game. It was pretty decent. Kind of hard to make a Metroid Prime type game on the DS, but it worked pretty well, and it had online multiplayer, and you could find people easily, and you could play. You know, it wasn't the greatest control scheme or visuals, but it worked. So, yeah, I'm just as amazed, and that's the one disappointing thing about it, definitely, is, you know, why did they do this? It's kind of weird.
Well, considering that the game is, you know, the design of the game is done. It's only to implement, you know, updates and update the graphics, make it look smoother, and put the 3D. I don't know how hard it is to implement that 3D in there, but I mean, they didn't have to make a game. They just had to take an old one and put a new coat of paint on it. Why? I don't understand why they wouldn't have put more time into some online multiplayer like that if they're going to offer the mode at all.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I could see the local, because I can tell you right now, the most fun I've ever had, and it wasn't my Game Boy Advance or SP, the most fun I've ever had with Nintendo's local was Mario Kart Double Dash and Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. That, to my mind, would have just not been as much fun if you weren't all sitting right there together.
Yeah, Double Dash.
I'm sorry, John. Go ahead and say it again. I cut you off.
Oh, I was just going to say, Double Dash was great. We had a lot of fun with that on couch co-op.
Yeah, I mean, couch wars, basically. And that was the thing. I mean, it's not excusable or forgivable for them leaving out multiplayer or online multiplayer. What I'm saying is that I think I would personally rather play something like Star Fox with four of my buddies sitting right there in the same room. Yeah, I know online is the huge thing today, and everything must have it, and everything must have multiplayer. But still, to me, there's some games. This is the same. I feel kind of the same way about Mario Kart 3DS, although if I had a 3DS and Patrick was online and Glacinator and whoever, I'd play it online with my buddies. But I tend to like those games more when you're all sitting there. Even back to the original Mario Kart, sitting around waiting to take your turn on the, you know, on the, what the hell was the original one on, Patrick? Super NES?
Yep. Oh, okay. There goes my mute button. Yep, Super NES.
Okay. You know, so, I mean, it's not forgivable that Nintendo did it, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Nintendo didn't do it for the reasons I'm stating, thinking everybody will be playing it together. I mean, it's stupid on their part,
yeah.
But I could kind of see that thinking, given it's Nintendo.
Well, no. I'm sure... Go ahead, Pat.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, I'm by the look of that commercial, the way that they're really making it look fun for four grown men to have four 3DSs all playing the same game, you know? They really want the everybody to buy one, because I don't know how many... I don't know four people who have 3DSs.
That's what I was going to say, you know? In Japan, and they're the ones who made it, you could, you know, sit on the subway, walk down the street, and you'll bump into people with especially DSs, and I'm sure in the future 3DSs are everywhere. So maybe that was how they were thinking about it, at least for Japan. You could start up a multiplayer match pretty much anywhere. I think you're born with a DS. They give you a DS before they slap you in Japan. The thing is, here in North America, and I'd say probably Europe, good luck. Like, I thought that was a funny commercial. I also thought it was kind of weird. I don't see four grown men in their 30s getting together, sitting on the couch and doing this. You know, I could see my friends. One of them's in Edmonton right now. How am I going to do that? I used to play video games with this guy. He used to throw my controllers on the ground in rage sitting on the couch. I can't do that anymore. He doesn't live anywhere near me. You know, most of the people I played Super Nintendo or even some N64 games like Star Fox with, we're big boys and girls now and we're off in our own little lives. We'd need the internet, at least here in North America. I'd say in Japan it's definitely a viable, fun option, but not here.
Well, and like I said, as much as I defend Nintendo at times, I get a little sick of the overwhelming, well, we're just going to make them pay for what they did with the Wii for everything they do. In this case, I think it's just Nintendo's not wise enough to what exactly you're saying. I mean, I can still see a case where guys in their late 20s, early 30s would get together on the couch. But like you said, Pat, it's just I don't think Nintendo understands North America well enough. And that's where it does bite them in the ass at times. Hey, by the way, how many more of these ambassador freebie games do you have? Are we going to make a... No, I don't care. I don't care how you do it. I just find it funny because either...
I'm stretching it. I'm milking it. They all...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm fine with the milking, but now I want to start a pool amongst the whole WPO crew. Where do we get to first? Does Pat run out of ambassador games, or do we get to episode 100 first?
Well, I've all 10 games for the NES. Games were all available at once, so technically I could have downloaded them all, but I decided to download one per week every week. I might have downloaded two the first time, so I think I got about 6 or 7 left. By then, maybe the other 10 free games from the Super Nintendo Game Boy Advance games will be available, and then I'll have 10 more, so... Can you say milking?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, we're going to be closing out 2011 with the ambassador shtick in possibly episode 100. Cool. I don't care if you milk it.
That's something to talk about. That's why I do it.
Exactly. All right, John, what have you been playing?
Okay. I've been playing Red Dead, of course. I'm playing all the side missions, so I'm chucking along there pretty slowly. Just to get a gauge of where I am, Bruce, I just did my first mission or two in Mexico. So where am I in the grand scheme?
You're probably about middle to a little past middle. So you just did your first two in that first little cantina town you come into when you cross the Rio Grande?
Just the first mission, yeah.
Yeah, it's for the little Mexican Federale dude or whatever. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, you're probably about half to a little over half.
Okay. So I'm getting there. That's cool. Yeah, Xbox Live has a sale on right now, if you guys don't know, for this week for Rockstar Games, of which the Undead Nightmare Pack is now... I'm not sure if it's half off, but it's significantly reduced. And also, that includes some of the... multiplayer packs, which have extra characters and different maps and modes, I think. And so I got all that. So my it looks like my Red Dead experience is going to go on longer than the main game, which I have no problem with. I hear the Undead Nightmare is supposed to be pretty good and surprisingly lengthy for a DLC single-player experience. So I'm looking forward to that. But otherwise, I won't dwell too long on it again. But my buddy Roger, who I'll give a shout out because he's having some eye surgery today. I hope he's doing all right. I hope he'll see me next week. And so we played some games on the weekend, and we played some multiplayer stuff. So first we played multiplayer Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, and I'm going to throw out another plug here to my review of that game on sidequesting.com. It's a great game. The multiplayer was particularly good, where you have to help each other out, get to hard to reach places and items that are just out of reach. So the way it works is, you know, one person's Lara Croft and the other person is Totec, which is one of the newly awakened spirits that come about. And of course, both of you team up to fight his nemesis Zolot. And the game is, I think I talked about it before slightly on the show, but it's a top-down perspective Diablo style. There's lots of the combat is twin stick shooting type. It's, you know, it's really tight, really good. Feels great. And every level, of course, is a physics-based puzzle game with switches and big stone balls to move around onto buttons, and you have to climb and you have to use each other's weapons. So Totec has a spear that you can use to climb up to higher ledges, and she and Lara has a grappling hook to pull you up from lower levels, because you are too heavy to climb on your own spear, as it turns out. So you kind of have to help each other out. And what I liked the most were the scenes where you have to really rush to get, like, there's one scene in particular early in the game where these walls are moving toward you and about to push you off a cliff, and you have to climb up one by one to get to the exit at the top. And of course, some of them are twice the height than that you can physically jump, so you have to help each other out. And of course, you're rushing and you're yelling at each other, throw down that spear, get me up there, pulling me up with that grappling hook, hurry up. And it's a pretty cool phenomenon when you're trying to work together and get yourself through. So I again recommend that one very highly. Then we moved on to another multiplayer game, the multiplayer mode of Ms. Explosion Man. That game is it's tough on its own as a single-player game, two-player, where you have to coordinate your explosions to get yourself propelled to higher spots. It's fun, yet it can be a little bit tedious. It's a good thing they have that countdown button, so you get a 3-2-1, and then you both can explode at the same time and get yourself up to the levels. It also has an element of the hurry up and get, you know, help me get to this ledge before this, you know, disaster happens, which is it's pretty fun, but it's tougher on a whole different level. Just as an aside, I noticed Ms. Explosion Man has a neat mode that you can unlock as you gather coins from each world. It's called a two girls one controller mode, where you can play multiplayer by yourself with one controller, so that you're coordinating your explodes all by yourself. It's kind of a funny name. And finally, we played some You Don't Know Jack, and that's a trivia game from a long time ago. I talked about that on the show as well, but it's a trivia show, game show kind of feel, where the host tells all these dirty jokes. Well, not really dirty jokes, but he makes these very subtle and not so subtle references and wisecracks, just to about everything from sex to, oh, you name it. It's in there. And I played that a long time ago, back in the mid 90s or so on PC, and now it's on the various systems. So it's a great game to pick up. Each round is only about 15 minutes, so it's pretty good to if you have a couple people and just want to blast through and play for a bit and take a break. Like, there's no long periods where you're just answering questions and waiting and no chance to take a break. I find seeing it kind of like that, the longer rounds take a bit too long, but Jack is very well paced. And that's the end of my multiplayer night. But just before I came on the show, I decided to poke around on my PS3, and I found that the God of War Origins collection demo was available to play, download and play. So what that is a collection of the God of War PSP games, up-resed and transferred over to PS3 for download through PSN. And so I gave it a shot, and it has the two games, Chains of Olympus and Ghosts of Sparta from the PSP. And in the demo, you get to play the first, I guess, 15, 20 minutes or so of Ghosts of Sparta, and it's surprisingly pretty. They really did a pretty good job of bringing that God of War experience. I mean, I played God of War 4, or I'm sorry, 3, not that long ago, and felt like I was right back in there. Of course, the textures aren't as pretty and detailed and that kind of thing. But if this was the game that was on PSP, well, as much as PSP gets dogged for being a portable PS2, it's very pretty. If I was a PSP player, I probably wouldn't have had any problem with it. So yeah, that's about what I've been playing. We're going to talk about Piles of Shame later, but once I get through that, I think I might pick up that God of War downloadable game.
I played. I can't get it out of my head. I'm Spartacus. That's all I think of when somebody says Sparta. And obviously, from the dead silence, nobody knows that movie I'm talking about. Anyways, what I have been playing. Oh, well, and then the better parody by Mel Brooks. What I've been playing, I really concentrated on two games since the show was posted, as most of you that listen to the show know. I usually get the show posted early in the morning on Fridays, Pacific time. About that same time, my Twitter feed exploded with the news that Notch had leaked the 1.8 update for Minecraft. Now, you've all heard me bitching, pissing, and moaning about how it's taken way too long, in my less than humble estimation, for the 1.8 update to launch. So when I found out that he had leaked the java.jar file to try this, I, of course, hunted it right up, downloaded it, waited until I got back from work later that morning, and put it in there and went. It was basically a disaster. There were several bugs in it in the first incarnation, and it even said on it pre-release, which tells me that the boys at Mojang, Jeb, and Notch, and the rest of the crew had basically just decided to unleash it on a faithful group of gamers and let us be beta testers, which, to be honest, I didn't have that much of an issue with. Because every time there's been a major update for Minecraft, you've been basically a beta tester, you know. And so I was okay with most of the bugs and thing, but the one thing that terrified me, and to be quite honest, pissed me off a little bit, was it had some severe frame rate issues. I'm talking at one point, and I had not been exploring or moving that much, which was kind of ironic considering this 1.8 adventure update is all about exploring, where my frame rates were dropping to like 2 frames per second. Now, my Frankenstein computer is not a top-of-the-line i5 or i7 Intel, quad-core. But at the same time, too, it plays a lot of pretty decent games on Steam. I'm pretty sure with the right amount of rigging, I could run the original Crysis at a decent frame rate. And Minecraft, graphically, while it's cool, is not anything near the realm of Crysis. So this frame rate thing really pissed me off for quite a number of hours. And then I just started thinking like a PC gamer again, something I don't have to generally do as much, which proves how lazy I'm getting since I've adopted the consoles. And I got it to where it was tolerable. But still, I couldn't explore. too far because it'd start lagging out and frame rates would drop. So I dealt with this for Friday night, Saturday. I finally gave up on it Sunday and part of Saturday evening to return to Dead Island, which I will talk about in a minute. Then Monday morning, a second version of the pre-release dropped, and it fixed a lot of the bugs. Apparently, there was a huge memory leak in the first version of code, and so that fixed a lot of the frame rate issues. I'm still having a few small issues with it, but I've been able to tweak my video card to the point where I think I've got it pretty much wrapped up. And finally, I think today or yesterday, I apologize there, the actual update came out. It's interesting. It makes Minecraft a lot more fun. There's huge ravines down there. My basic tactic right now is I basically explore and explore and explore, collecting resources until I find what's known as an NPC village. Now, that title is a little bit misleading because there's actually no NPCs in there. It's just basically like a village that a bunch of people just decided to walk away from. I generally will start my buildings or town near one of these NPC villages. There's a bunch of abandoned underground mines that are fairly cleverly done, especially when you consider that they're code-generated. They're not hand-put together. And you can tell the difference by the fact that there's... It looks like a mineshaft. It's got wood, like, supports every so often, which also introduces one of the new enemy or mob characters, the Cave Spider. Those little bastards can be a pain in the ass. Also introduces you to the concept of hunger. I'm kind of still not decided on that. On one hand, it's kind of a neat feature. On the other hand, it's like, dude, we already had health. I don't really think I get it. So I'm going to have to get back to you next week on the hunger aspect of what they added with 1.8. They also add a new mob called the Enderman. Supposedly, when you look right at him, he warps over to you. Now, every encounter I've had with him, that has not happened. But maybe I'm not getting my cursor right on them or correctly. It could be idiot at the controls rather than the game. Introduces some new kind of farming foods, watermelon and pumpkins. Let's see. What else is there? Also, they introduce a concept of strongholds. Now, so far, all I've been able to find is miles and miles and miles of abandoned mines, which is very easy to get lost in, and that can be very, very annoying. So I haven't really plumbed the depths of the underground yet to try and find these strongholds. I'm kind of curious to see what that exactly entails, because they have not said, and I haven't really gone searching to find out. Overall, considering how rough my experience with the 1.8 pre-release or preview build, if you'd like, started out last Friday, I'm really happy with it. In fact, I've probably played Minecraft more than Dead Island, not so much because I don't like Dead Island, but because it's just Minecraft sucked me back in again, and it's easier to jump into and climb out of than Dead Island has been, which brings us to that game. Still liking Dead Island. As I said last week, you really got to be understanding that the controls are a little sloppy, that the fighting animations are a little sloppy, so that will cause you some frustration. That kind of frustration really doesn't bother me. I am like at level 20-ish, 23, 24-ish, somewhere around in there right now. And I'm getting pretty far along in the game as single player. And it's just like Borderlands in the regard that you're really pushing the envelope whether you should be playing this single player or co-op. In fact, I've seen a lot of people who have just said the co-op experience is the only way to go. And to a certain extent, that kind of pisses me off, because if it was meant to be a co-op game, then you should have marketed it as that. And I probably wouldn't have bought it. Not so much because I don't have people to play co-op with. Audio Master G has the game too. We just haven't had time in our schedules to get together, and it's kind of like what Patrick was talking about earlier with, you know, four people on the couch together, that he is correct, because it's almost impossible to get enough people together online. So I have really nothing different to say about it overall than last week. If you like a challenge, if you have no issue with being frustrated a little bit,
or you know, understand that it's probably more of a co-op game than a single-player game, but you can get through it in single-player as long as you're willing to adapt and kind of strategize, then it's definitely worth a pickup in the bargain bin or this next week or whenever you so feel like it. But there are two major things, and I'm not going to bang on Dead Island solely for this. It's something that has been a bug in my ass since the start of video games, and this game, especially since it's a huge open world game, there's just no excuse for it. Number one is the difficulty level. Okay, I understand, you're in a zombie horde, like when you're in a certain city, it's supposed to be like 28 days later, and not that I've ever seen the movie, I don't want to watch that schlock shit. Okay, fine, but there's certain times where it's like being able to turn down the difficulty a little bit would be kind of a nice thing. Now, somebody who listens to the show and has played the game can correct me if I'm wrong, but I have not been able to find any place to do that. Now, maybe I'm just being in too big a hurry and too impatient and a dumbass and I haven't found it. So that, to me, especially in an open-world game and in a game where some people are going to choose to play it single-player rather than four-player co-op, it's just inexcusable. I mean, I'm not going to put that on Techland and Deep Silver alone. That it's just inexcusable, period, to me in games. And the other one, and you've all heard me rage about this 100 times, I'm going to rage about it again, is not letting me save when I goddamn want to. Twice in this game. Because if tank points and saving whenever the goddamn game feels like it has bitten me square in the ass. And here's the thing. You want me to take your $60 AAA title, pop it out of my Xbox, and trade it in so somebody can buy it used? Ooh, evil used games. Well, there's no faster way to do that than not give me a place to save. I'll give you two prime examples. As I just think I already said, I'm repeating myself. Sorry, ranting here. I had to do a mission where it was four parts. You had to do these four things. After two of them, it was a frustrating, excruciating pain in the ass to do two of them, right? I thought I saw the little logo that said save. I said, you know what? I'm getting frustrated. I'm getting not quite mad enough to throw a controller, but we're climbing there. I'm just going to quit for now. I'll come back in a little bit, and I'll do the other two things. I'll finish the mission. Hey, no. I don't know what I saw and where the little save logo goes. When I came back, no, I had to start the whole goddamn mission over again. Now, at that point, I was really kind of almost irritated enough to just take the game out and say, screw you. Yeah. What? So some coder could be a friggin' lazy bastard and not put in save any time? And again, especially with a huge, massive open world game, which leads us to example two. One afternoon I popped it in and I knew I only had a certain amount of time, so I didn't get any missions underway. I just was wandering around randomly bashing zombies and collecting weapons, collecting parts, collecting this, collecting that, you know, pillaging the masses. And I played and played and played and played, you know, and I probably played like free roam, let's call it for lack of a better term, for about an hour and a half. And I'd seen the little save icon three or four times. I thought... Again, I must have been having, you know, delusions or something of that nature or whatever the hell else you call it. Because I finally went, okay, you know what? I'm probably going to lose about 5 minutes of gameplay, but screw it. I'm out of here. Had to go anyway. Quit. Come back. Of the hour and a half I roamed around, I only got like 20 minutes of it. And I'd collected some pretty good stuff and some pretty good experience in that hour and only got 20 minutes of it. That's just bullshit. There's just no excuse for it. I'm sorry. This isn't Ninja Gaiden. This isn't crappy PS1 games where they give you bad save point. You only got two health bars left before you face a big-ass boss. No, we're 2011, you frickin' morons. Ugh. If Red Dead Redemption had done that, it wouldn't have been Game of the Year to me. It would have been Game's shitbag. So, but I know I've been going on and on, and I'm ranting. That's still, even with those two things, that's not so much Dead Island specific as it is gaming industry specific. I still really like Dead Island. It's been worth $60. I do not regret pre-ordering it. I'm really looking forward to freeing up some time on my schedule to make time to play with Audio Master G. Probably starting a new character specifically for co-op and that kind of thing. And if you like bashing zombies and you like a challenge, It's definitely worth the purchase price. But those two notions that I just rambled on and on about, it gets under my goddamn skin. So ridiculous. Now, Mr. John, I think I heard your mic come open like you had a question for me.
Oh, it wasn't so much a question. It was an agreement about that save, the save or lack thereof, when in games. If that happened to me, and I worked on it for that long and only got that much benefit out of it, that game would have been back into the case and put on the shelf and back into the pile.
My thing is it sounds masochistic, and you've said it when I've talked about Dragon Age. You know, a game I did not like but continued to play or wasn't really all that thrilled with. I am a completist, or I'm not sure that's the term, but that kind of frustration and that kind of, oh, so this game screwed me out of this, well, I'll show you. You know, it kind of internally challenges me more than it does some gamers. I by no means would call anybody stupid that got, you know, that had happened to them what happened to me, did what you just said. No. And like I said, you can't convince me. It's just like Patrick's online play with Star Fox 3DS. You can't convince me it's so difficult to code a button and a function in a string of thousands of codes that just says, save game now. You know, it's like Patrick, you want to know everything you need to know about WonderPod, folks? This is a good time capsule for a video. Patrick thinks everything should be controlled the same way, and I think there should be save points and everything. And we're not wrong. Right, Pat?
Yep, pretty much. That's it in a nutshell.
Because could you imagine trying to play Red Dead like that? I mean, some of the missions in Red Dead, you do have to wait for a checkpoint, or it will bone you a little bit, if I remember right. But could you imagine playing Red Dead like that? I mean, it's an open world game too, which makes it even worse because you're gonna free roam.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there are things that, luckily, most of the things that you do, like automatically spawn a save point. Like if you break a horse, it saves right away. You know, like
right.
Almost anything at all. If you visit the store, I think it even saves. I think so. But at least there's house, you know, your homes, and you can set up camp pretty well wherever you want. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you need to be, if you're like, oh, saving whenever the player wants, that's so pedestrian. Well, then make it a gimmick. Like I had to give Rockstar credit for making it kind of a gimmick. Mm-hmm. You know, like I got pissed off a few times in Red Dead because it's like, your camp's not flat enough. What are you talking about? I'm in the desert. What am I, on a rock? If I'm stupid enough to sleep on a rock video game, leave me alone. You know, but that was more just general nuisance. It's like, your camp's not flat enough. Pick another spot, stupid.
Mm-hmm. Move away from the road.
Yeah. Well, that kind of made more sense. Don't get run over by a wagon. Yeah, exactly. So... I've been playing one other game, but we're probably going to cover that in news, or I will talk about it before the end of the show, because it seems kind of silly to talk about it and what I've been playing and then talk about it again. But it's a game I think you should play. Ooh, secrets. let's move on to our discussion topic, and actually our discussion topic this week was brought to us by our very own John, and then kind of got evolved or mutated, pick your choice of words, by our very own Audio Master G, who kind of popped up some stuff in Facebook. We're going to talk about the concept of the pile of shame, meaning a bunch of games you bought but haven't touched yet. You know, you bought them in the bargain bin. I'm hoping you didn't buy them new. You know, that kind of thing. It just never got around to. And I think we'll just start with that. And since I kind of already know the answers to this, Patrick, we're going to go with you first. Do you have any kind of pile of shame, or how do you handle your gaming purchases as it relates to all of this kind of stuff, you know, picking up games and never playing them, so on and so forth?
I've heard people who do this who will buy games. Actually, a friend of mine at work was at a garage sale, and he found some Xbox 360 games that were, you know, $3 and $4 each, and some of these games he's like, I don't even know what this game is, and I bought them for my kids, but I don't think my kids will ever play them, stuff like that. I guess, you know, on a whim, people buy games because they're such a good deal, and then they never play them, or they get overwhelmed, or, you know, there's so many games that just keep pumping out, and most of them are good. And we've got downloadable content now, and we've got games on Steam, on the PlayStation Network, and on Xbox Live Arcade, indie games, you name it. Dance for Kinect. So many games that I can easily see how people start to get a pile of shame. And, you know, what we mean by that, of course, games you buy or get a hold of, and then you just don't play them. Well, for me, I don't really do that. A prime example was when I went to buy Star Fox 64 3D. Future Shop had a big discount. There's all sorts of stuff there. There were Wii games for $4.97. There were 360 games. There was probably PlayStation games. I just don't have a PlayStation, so I didn't look. And, you know, there was a few there. I'm like, yeah, you know, I might play that. But it just wasn't in me to buy it. So I don't usually buy video games unless I intend on playing them. But I do have sort of a pile of shame, and that's similar way. And this is video games that I do buy, whether it's used or whether it's cheap or I download it on sale or whatever. And then for whatever reason, probably because the next big shiny thing comes out, I forget about them, or I just end up in that big plastic bag in my basement of video games. I have a bag of shame, I think. But, you know, Transformers, War for Cybertron, I think it was called. Not the latest one based on the crappy movie, but this one was really good. It was almost like a Gears of War meets Transformers. It was taking place on Cybertron, not on Earth. It had a lot of the voices that you know from the cartoons that are people that are still alive. It was Optimus Prime. It wasn't somebody different. Really good game, and you could play as Decepticons, and you could play as Autobots, and it was like a new version of the old retro original franchise. So it was great. And, you know, it's down in my bag of shame in the basement. You could play as an Autobot and as a Decepticon. I'm probably 25% done that game. And I don't know why I stopped playing it. Something huge probably came out, a Call of Duty, a Halo, whatever. I just stopped playing it. So that's kind of a pile of shame for me. Games that I will play the game for sure. I'll probably open it the day I get it, like a little kid who can't wait. But there are games like Transformers that I may as well have not played it. I'm like 20%, 25% done them. Other games, Xbox Live Arcade, I kind of had this happens to me, probably because I picked them up cheap. Snoopy, you know, Snoopy Flying Ace, speaking of flying games lately, I've been into those. I'm only probably two. I don't know how many missions there are in Snoopy Flying Ace, but I've only done two of them. I'm probably 10% or 15% through the single player. I did play a little bit of multiplayer, but there's no way that I got even a quarter through that game. Another game, Braid. I mean, that game is beautiful. That game's artistic. It's one of the cooler downloadable games, and I think I only got about halfway through the second level. I mean, it's cool. You got to think outside of the box. It's artistic, etc., etc., but I just don't go back to it. You know, I'm probably, again, 20% to 10 to 15% probably in that one through the game. So for me, it's not games that I will buy and never play. I just cannot do that. Yesterday was a prime example of, you know, Xbox and Wii games under $5. I just didn't buy them. But I do fall into the bag of shame in my basement, whether it's Transformers or whether it's downloadable titles. I definitely have a lot of games that, for some reason, I just forget about.
Mr. Kehoe, it's your time to shine with this whole pile of shame concept.
Pat, I want to get my hands on a cheap copy of that Transformers game. that thing is right up my alley, and I haven't found it at my magic price point of $20 yet. So,
Wait a minute before you go, John. I'm sorry. Is that the one we played the multiplayer demo with Carlos and Gunstage and the whole mess?
Yeah, it was not bad. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure I had the right one. Sorry, John.
Not the ones based on the movies.
From the reviews and stuff I read, it kind of reminded me of that Ghostbusters game that came out pretty recently. I guess maybe a year or two ago now. But that was a decent game. That was a very good rental, and And I mean, I finished the game over the course of a weekend, and you know, I mean, I didn't want to buy it, but I thought it was an excellent game. And this kind of feels like that kind of thing where you, it's a retro style. You're not going to play it for weeks and weeks, but it's something to get a good, you know, single playthrough. But that being said, I'm going to move on to my pile of shame. So as I've spoken about lots of times on the show, I always tend to try to buy games on the cheap, and I guess I have that kind of personality where I love rooting through the bargain bins that of various stores. I'm such a regular at the electronics store at the local supermarket there. Whenever I go shopping just for groceries every week, I'll have a snoop through and look for the new deals and ask what's on sale and stuff and see what I can find and what I can get. And as a result, I have a substantial pile of shame, which is, as I'm going to try to blast through my list a little bit, which consists of games from everything from PS2 and GameCube right up to the current systems, and stuff that came out. Actually, all my games are from are in the pile of shame from last year, mostly because by now they're cheaper. But I love finding good deals and especially of quality games, because as time passes, you really do get a good feel for what games are worth spending your money on, just, you know, by reviews and word of mouth and hearing what people have to say about it. So when you find those gems, I was the same way back when I was collecting comic books. I used to love going through the cheapo bins trying to find the hidden gems. So anyway, onto my list. So I'll try to work chronologically if I can. By system. So PlayStation 2, I'm sitting on Katamari Damacy 1 and 2. I have, my wife constantly bugs me about Okami, which is a Zelda-type game, which had a sequel put out on DS recently. And I've been meaning to go back to that 100 times and just never sat down and played it. On GameCube, I have Battalion Wars. On Wii, I have Battalion Wars 2. I have 1 and 2, which I don't think I've played any more than 5 minutes of either one of them. which brings me into the current gen, I guess, is probably the best place to go. So, for Wii, I have Metroid Other M sitting on the shelf, No More Heroes, Sin and Punishment Star Successor. Now, I remember all these games I got for less than $20. On the Xbox 360, I'm looking at Splinter Cell Conviction, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Fable 3, Overlord, Dead Space 2, Castlevania Lords of Shadow, DJ Hero 2, and PS3, the only one that I had that I haven't played, was a gift. It was Hot Shots Golf Out of Bounds, which I kind of doubt I'll ever play. Now, these are all disc-based games. So let's move on to the downloadable space, which is a little more embarrassing. So on Virtual Console, I haven't played Sin and Punishment, Cave Story, Metroid, or Super Metroid. I never played those Metroid games to their completion, and I've been sitting on my... I don't know if you remember when Metroid Prime 3... I have played the Metroid Prime games, and when 3 came out, they had a bunch of specials on or releases of the Metroid games all in a row, and I snatched all those up. On Xbox Live Arcade, I have barely touched Battlefield, and my achievements will attest to this, Battlefield 1943, Bionic Commando Rearmed, Beyond Good and Evil HD, Ikaruga, Monday Night Combat, Monkey Island 1 and 2. On PlayStation Network, I have Super Stardust HD, Flower, Back to the Future Episode 1, and the fourth, and it's not, they're not PSN games, but I got them from the PS3 Welcome Back program. I have 4 PSP games sitting there without a system to play them on. So, how about that? For DS, I have The World Ends With You, all the Professor Layton games I've never played. Though, now some of those games, my wife has played, and they have been played by somebody in the house. But these are games that I want to go and play myself. Ghost Tricks in that list of games belong to her that I want to play, and Hotel Dusk. And finally, on Steam, and my only excuse for the Steam games are that they were on sale, and I really haven't played them because my computer really wasn't up to snuff. My computer was almost 10 years old, so now I actually have the ability to play these games. As I mentioned before, Half-Life 1, which I haven't touched since that day I talked about it on the show, Max Payne 1 and 2, And Yet It Moves, and Torchlight. And that is my current list of backlog games. I have, last year I made a concerted effort to not buy any new games and just play old ones, and so I've knocked that down considerably, but that being said, that is what I have currently. What do you think, fellas?
You got me beat by 10 miles.
Do I have a problem?
Potentially.
I have a suggestion. Garage sale.
Stop buying video games.
Oh my god! I can't give away my babies. Are you crazy?
I can see a video game episode of Hoarders right now. Yeah. By the way, Jim Sterling and his wife Alex could both die in a fire for getting me to actually. Well, not they didn't physically tell me to watch it, but finally convincing me via tweets that I needed to watch that god awful pathetic show. But I could see them doing a St. John's edition with John the video game hoarder.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
Or disgusting, one or the other, yeah.
I'm going to go with impressive. I'm not feeling mean tonight. It can be. I suppose it could be considered disgusting. And you know what's funny? And I'll talk about mine, but what's funny is digital distribution and the effect it has on these piles of shame. And we'll get into that in a second. We were going to actually talk about finishing games, but it's painfully obvious all of us in one aspect or another never get around to finishing certain kinds of titles, which seems to be the trend anymore, and that's where I kind of, Audio Master G had this thing where the trend was getting to be people not finishing them as much, and which ties it nicely for me. Back when I was a PC-only gamer, which was from the first time I played a PC video game until 2007, of course, I had an Atari 2600 and played on my buddy's consoles, so I wasn't a complete elitist jackbag snob. I always finished games. Now, part of that was due to the rural area I lived in. You didn't quite have the selections. We didn't have Best Buy back then. We didn't have GameStop right here in my local town. We did have an EB Games in the mall in a town north of me, but that's like a 25-minute drive. So you kind of learned to not only choose what you played carefully, but also play them to a completion, and usually play through them two or three times. I think it's why today I still will be willing to play through games like Battlefield Bad Company 2, which didn't have the most stellar single player, but for me, when I was bored and there's a lull and I can't really afford anything, it was fun to just play through it again, blasting shit aimlessly. But now you move into the digital distribution / Bruce McGee becoming a console gamer era. And actually, on the physical titles, I've done really, really well. I had to actually sit down and think about this because I've traded in a lot of games. I'm leaving out the racing titles because that really doesn't count, because you could sit there and play those for ad nauseum and never complete everything in them. So there's two games currently sitting on my Xbox 360 titles that I have not finished. One is Lost Odyssey. I picked that up used. I'm on disc 3. I just never could drag myself back into it. It's a good game. It's a great JRPG, but just never have gotten back to it. And the other one is, Overlord 2. Now I'm sure some schmuck could dig through my achievements and trophies and maybe find another one or two that I don't remember that I haven't finished. But those are the two that I have physical copies that I still own that I have not finished. Dead Island doesn't count because I'm still playing that. And there is one more. Listening to Patrick talk about Darksiders decided me? I speak English very fluently. It's my first language. Made me decide to give a brawler a shot. And I liked it well enough, but it just was not for me, and with the timing of a few games releasing after I bought it used, and the fact that I bought it at the same time along with Singularity, which is a really good game you should give a playthrough, and The Saboteur, I just couldn't juggle all three. I decided to trade Darksiders back in. That is not a statement on the game, although, again, it had some issues, that technical issues that I did not particularly like. So those three of my physical Xbox 360 games, anything that's in my old school PC catalog, I guarantee you I've beaten all of them. So I was really, really good about it. And then along came digital distribution. And this is where I kind of fall in John's trap. I don't do it with physical discs, because when I go into GameStop, I know the types and genres of games I like to play, and most games, especially since doing this podcast, I at least have a summary of knowledge about. So when I'm hitting the bargain bins, I kind of already know what I want to get. I kind of already know what I've missed. Like, eventually, I'm sure I'll pick up Gears of War 3 just to see if Dom and What's-His-Face, Marcus, whose name I can never remember, finally get it on and love each other forever and ever, because it's my favorite joke. Or to see if Carmine lives or dies, which I'm sure Patrick will spoil for us as soon as he plays it, so that's not going to matter. You know, and same with COD Modern Warfare 3. I've played every COD game. Might as well, you know, play the single-player campaign at some point. So I kind of tend to know what I'm bargain bin diving for. Yeah, I take a chance on some stuff. Like, I didn't know a ton about Singularity. I just, two people who I know and trust said that it was really a good game, and it just got overlooked because of a bunch of other shooters. It was a really fun game, had some really interesting concepts to it. You know, so there is gambles. But then we get into, as I said, and I apologize, digital distribution or downloadable stuff. My two weaknesses are Steam sales and good old games. There's a lot of games that I either lost my physical PC copies for or just never got around to playing it. Things like Icewind Dale, the original Witcher, that Humble Bundle pack that I bought. I still haven't beat a lot of those games, although sadly for Patrick, I am further along in Braid than he is. So I do have a digital file of shame on the PC side, and it's the same on Xbox Live Arcade. I really do my best to try and finish Xbox Live Arcade games, but I know for a fact that I haven't finished Outland. Patrick and I never finished it co-op either. I never got finished with Trials HD, never got finished with Snoopy, although I'm like one mission away from it, so it makes it even more pathetic. I'm sure there's others on there. And I'm not even going to talk about my PS2 games, because most of those I got with the PS2 when my buddy gave it to me. Some of them still have plastic wrap on them. I haven't even opened them. You know, so that's, I don't really count that as part of the pile of shame. But definitely, you know, with GOG, most every game is $10 or under. So when I walk away from one, like The Witcher, which got really frustrating but wasn't broken or terrible, I kind of tend to justify it because it was only like $10. Or a Steam sale. You know, I bought some games on Steam that it's like I played them for a few times and then I went, I only paid like $8 for this thing. I'll go play the Xbox. You know, so, and which leads us into the fact that, and Patrick, I'll have you go first since you're like me with the XBLA, digital distribution's just making this worse, both from a standpoint of it gives you more to look at and from a standpoint of you pay less for it, so you're probably more likely to walk away from it. Is that kind of accurate, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's so much easier now, whether you're sitting on your couch with your PlayStation controller, or whether you know on the PlayStation Network, or whether you're sitting on your PC at Steam, or whatever that next new one is, or Origin, or whatever. It's making it really, really easy. And it's bringing back things. Oh, yeah, I should do that. I should buy that. So it's definitely a lot more tempting. I have to really be careful downloading stuff, you know, especially Xbox Live Arcade. That seems to be my weakness. Not so much on Steam, at least not yet. But, yeah, it's definitely a way to get these digital piles of shame.
Yeah, actually, you should be petting and hugging your keyboard and mouse, because if you were actually comfortable with those controls or did have a controller that you were really, really happy with, you'd probably be in the same boat as John and I. So in reality, your keyboard and mouse are kind of keeping you from becoming just like us.
Yep. And my pen, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. God, I forgot about it. God, I haven't made fun of you about that in so long, I'd forgot about it.
I bring it up.
Yeah, I mean, what, you want me to? I mean, that's what it's kind of saying. No, I mean, I understand your paranoia well. You and I see things differently, but I totally get, that aspect of it for you. And if you remind me after the show, I learned about something the other day that actually might help you in that regard. And no, it's not medication.
Oh.
Unless you want drugs, then I could probably help you too. God, now I sound like a... excuse me. Oh, down the wrong pipe. Now I sound like an illegal pharmacist. John, do you think that... I mean, you're kind of more the alpha pile of shame. You've got both physical copies and digital distribution, but do you find digital makes it worse?
Yeah, it's becoming really too easy to be tempted into picking up games on the cheap. Those Steam sales are often just so good. The last big Steam sale, I really had to keep my finger off the mouse because it was just so many good things coming up, and again I didn't have the computer for it. So now that I do, I'm a little bit worried about what's going to come out on the next, like when they have their is it biannual big sales? Like they have a daily deal anyway, but
I think they have a fall one coming up. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that. What's going to happen there? but I tell you, digital distribution I think is a great thing, and I download a lot of games like Pat on Xbox Live, and I think their weekly deal of the week is a tremendous way to sell digital distribution games and DLC and stuff the way they do. I've picked up a metric shit ton of stuff from that, and the cool thing though, or not the cool thing, but the sad thing for what they don't take advantage of is are deals on their games on demand. If they put those games on demand games at a price that is a lot more attractive than double what I could pay at EB Games somewhere. Like right now, everything is just way overpriced. But if they had a weekly deal on demand games, I'd be in a lot more trouble, and I'd be investing in bigger hard drives for my Xbox, because like Metro 2033 is a game that I keep looking for to be on the cheap as well. And why isn't that cheap on demand every once on their sales? I don't understand why they don't want my money.
That it'll never happen. I'll tell you why they don't want your money. And again, the president of the company that produced Heavy Rain was whining and crying about this bullshit this week because of used game sales.
Well,
the price you see on demand is what it would probably roughly be at retail if it was still being sold new. And publishers are not going to budge on that. They're not going to let Microsoft put it on sale because they're crying so badly about losing used game sales, or losing money on that they're digging their feet in on these games on demand. But what's hilarious about that is it just loses them more sales. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just telling you why you're never, ever going to see those on sale, not even Microsoft's.
Oh, that's fine. But I can tell you that, I've said this on Twitter, I will never buy an on-demand game at those prices, especially there's no reason for me to, for me the person who I just proved it to everybody that when the game hits my price point, I will basically go out and buy it. And if I saw the kind of prices that are more attractive to me, they don't have to keep it permanently there, but I mean, just to have a sale, I mean, look at what Steam does with their sales and just the way it drives overall sales of things like Portal and gets the word out there and gets people interested, and the more hands these games are in, the better it is for the game.
Well, like I said, you're absolutely positively correct, but the publishers have become so bullheaded about these physical used game sales, it's never going to happen. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely correct, but I'm just telling you, you're never, ever, ever going to see it. And until we get further into digital distribution, where the whole model is digital distribution. Mm-hmm. Because right now you have physical, where it's $60, and then it drops to like $50 or $49, and then it drops to $30, and then by the time it's around $30 or $25, it's usually so overwhelmed by used sales that they just kind of start yanking the plastic wrap ones off the shelves.
until it's full digital distribution. And Steam and Valve need to be held kind of outside all the rest of this digital distribution, because they've done it right since day one, and they always do it right. Everybody else is trying to come up with their own model. Most of the time, Microsoft's doing it wrong. But I guarantee you, in this case, it's publishers dragging their feet because, we need to make more money. There's people buying used games. I mean, that's just... But what's funny is it has, as far as I'm concerned, the opposite effect. Because instead of you buying it on demand, you wait until it shows up in your local EB used. So... I'm not saying their reasoning's right. You're absolutely correct about how it should be, but how it should be and how idiot publishers are going to be are two completely different things. So, well, there you go. We all have our piles of shame of different types and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Patrick and I are more digitally based. John takes the prize as Video Game Hoarder of the Year. So... let's move on to Audio Master G. That's right, he's back. He's got a question. Actually, the song he's going to have on this question is really, really cool this week. It comes from a game. It's a new game, too. So how he pulled this out of his ass, I do not know. Take it away, Audio Master G.
You ain't scared. Things that go bump in the night. Me, Sam B.
Hey, Audio Master G here. No sign of my five-time removed cousin once again. Oh well, I'm sure he's okay. And with the NHL season approaching, I bet he's going to forget that he's trapped in an escape wonder pod with a feces-flinging monkey anyways. But I'm not here to talk about hockey. Well, at least not this week. I'm here to talk about zombies, the undead kind, not those fast ones that are infected with super rabies and technically are still alive, and not the voodoo slave ones either.
Sam B to Papa Shango, I'm Baron Samedi. Handful of fingertips, toss them up like confetti. Stay full of corpse bitches, I'm a pimp of the dead. Come fuck with a zombie, I put a stake in your head, look.
A little while back, I came across a Technorati article entitled Video Games Promoting Violence Against Real People. And the headline caught my eye because this argument makes me want to promote violence against a dead horse, if you know what I'm saying. But it was a little misleading. It's actually about a game called Tea Party Zombies Must Die. The originator of the game is StarvingEyes.com. Okay, that's StarvingEyes.com for listeners who want to check it out. Basically, it's an FPS game where you go around killing zombies with the faces superimposed on top of them of the Tea Party of the United States. Some of these include the likes of Sarah Palin, you know, Bill O'Reilly, Newt Gingrich, Mike Huckabee, and Glenn Beck. Now, the author of this article treats it as an editorial with a not-so-objective take on the game. I'm not endorsing anyone going out and murdering living people. If it was an actual zombie apocalypse, however, I don't care who you were before you turned either. A zombie is not alive, let's make that clear. And there is no cure. However, as a form of entertainment or stress release, perhaps this is taking politics a little too far. Or is it? Do politics of this nature have a place in gaming? Furthermore, let's take zombies right out of the equation for the second part of this installment. Would your perception be different if these Tea Party politicians were alive in the game and casted as enemy militants? I've got to roll out, Autobot style, so I'll catch y'all next time. G out.
I got a zombie on me, and you can't harm me. Yeah, who do you, bitch? Drink blood like a vampire without warning. Who do you, bitch? Stand up. Sam B got the thing that go bump in the night. Whoa. Who do you, bitch? Hide your kids, grab your wife, better get out of sight. Who do you, bitch?
What is up, Audio Master G? Once again, with the questions, it's all right, we'll find that cousin five times removed. But for now, we'll answer your question, zombies, and more zombies. I don't know if I'm the guy to ask zombie questions to. I'm getting zombied out. They're everywhere. I was even watching them last night on TV, on Spike TV. I hope you saw that one. It was Zombies versus Vampires. Anyways, on whatever that fighting, what is that called? Ultimate Fighter or whatever. Anyways.
Wait a minute. You mean Ultimate Deadliest Warrior?
Deadliest Warrior was a horde of zombies versus vampire. Yep. Check it out if you guys missed it.
I don't even want to know how it turned out because I'm going to be pissed because I know who won and it's bullshit.
Vampire.
I guess. Yep. Oh, did? He did?
Yeah.
Oh, G's going to be pissed. Then.
High intelligence, striking thing. I don't know. It's all. Anyways.
Audio Master G and zombies can kiss my ass. Nothing beats vampire.
Yeah, the vampires would win, definitely.
Exactly.
Anyways, they're taking over these zombies everywhere. Hopefully not literally, or we're screwed, although Audio Master G probably has a strategy. Anyways, on to your question for the week. As far as that game that you mentioned, personally, I don't see myself very interested in it. Both reasons. A, zombies, I'm getting zombied out. And B, I don't really give a damn about these politicians. I'm pretty much overdosed with the zombies. And I'm the least interested of our crew. And American politics, well, you know, this Canadian's not even interested in his own country's politicians, let alone a foreign one. So, to be honest, I don't really care about the game at all. My perception would be no different, really, though, if they were cast as alive and not zombies, as whatever you call them, militants and stuff like that, I'd still shoot them. It's a video game. I don't care who it is. If the point of the game is to shoot live politicians who are coming at me with a gun or politicians who are zombies, I'm going to shoot them. It doesn't matter to me. I might enjoy the game even less, though, if they're not zombies. But that's just my take on the matter. So what do you guys have to say about this question?
Go, John, go.
Yeah, to me, the whole premise... actually, I'm going to say, Audio Master G, I hope that your five-time removed cousin is doing okay. But as back to your question, the zombies versus and politicians, it's satire. That's all it is. I don't think it's anything to take seriously. Whether there's zombie faces or whether there's the Tea Party guys, it's someone... making a joke in the form of a game for you to laugh at. That's all I think it is.
Okay, first part. No, it does not create or causes more potential for violence versus Tea Party candidates. This is your pretty typical run-of-the-mill liberal Democrat going, look, it's parody. It's funny. Until it happens to us, and then we get all outraged and want more gun control laws. Personally, for me, politicians, I don't care what country. Canada, America, some of those other minor ones across the ocean. Yes, I'm being a dick on purpose. All politicians are liars and bastards. I can't stand any of them. But so whether they stick them on zombies or whether it's real Tea Party people, I don't care again. Like Patrick said, they're just targets in a game. When I'm playing a shooting game, my job is to kill them and live. Simple as that. I don't care if Sarah Palin's face is on it. I don't care if Obama's face is on it. I don't care if Newt Gingrich's face is on it. I don't care about any of these fucking schmucks. They're all liars and bastards. Their job is not to so much run our country, but to get reelected every 4 years or get lucrative speaking tours. You know, that's so... Some little, and I'm assuming it's a leftist because it's all Tea Party faces, and the left here in America is famous for going hiding behind, well, it's just a parody until it happens to them. If he had wanted me to be more receptive to it, he would have also, or whoever created this would have also threw in some Democratic superstars such as Obama, Pelosi, Harry Reid. I can't think of any of the other jackwagons. Pick your fucking favorites. I don't care. It's not going to create more violence. Come on, can we just get past this bullshit at that point? It's parody, but it's horribly done and not very clever parody, and it does not matter two stinking shits whether it's on zombies or whether it's on real animations. Again, when most of us are playing video games, they're just targets on a screen that you need to kill before they kill you. But at the same time, it doesn't make you a training simulator. It doesn't desensitize you to violence, you know. People who have seen real bodily injury, real bodily violence to the human to a human, know that the video games haven't even begun. God damn, what's with me tonight? Haven't even begun to get close. You know, I thought, in fact, harkening back to Dead Island, they did a really good job with the zombies and how they look different. They're not the same run-of-the-mill over and over again like we've, you know, in Left 4 Dead, which kind of made me smile because I'm probably right behind Patrick and I'm, you know, overloaded with zombies and kind of tired of it. It was probably the only part of buying Dead Island that was a gamble. But overall, for the most part, and I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. I will go out of my way to make fun of both or either party in this country because they're all complete shits. I'm just hoping that the country goes down the toilet after I'm dead or when I'm too old to care. So there you go, Audio Master G. We're looking. We're hoping to find your 5-time removed cousin. But, you know, fate can be a fickle mistress. Oh, for fuck's sake. Fate can be a fickle mistress. So we're looking and we'll look forward to hearing from you next week. We have talked long enough with all of our different discussion topics. There will be no news, which is good because there wasn't much news, except you should go and hunt up a Super Smash Brothers de-evolved game, as they're calling it. It's by this dude. If you just look around on 1UP, his name's Pikey Geek. Basically, took Super Smash Brothers and de-evolved it to where it looks like it's on an original Game Boy. The graphics don't tear. They're not very shaky. It's smooth. You get all the same characters. It's just like playing Super Smash for the N64, except it looks like it's on a Game Boy. I picked it up, played it a bunch of times. I liked it. I'll be playing it more. But I do, as I put in these show notes to these guys, and amazingly enough, they didn't badger me too much about this, because I gave them the hint that they were going to get a triple secret question. Now, this triple secret question is not video game related, so it's perfect for the end of the show. It's internet related, though, and since we all use the internet for various and sundry things and spend a lot of time on the internet, both the audience and the three of us sitting here, I thought I'd ask you this question. I heard this on a morning radio show and then looked it up after. This guy wrote into Dear Abby, right? Him and his wife had been married for a decade, and he was just harmlessly surfing the internet, and he found a sex tape of his wife with a guy she had dated before she knew him. What I find interesting is, according to the gentleman's letter, the tape was made without her knowledge, and it was at least 13 years ago, meaning at least 3-4 years before the guy writing the letter and the woman met. Here is his question to Dear Abby, and her response was rather smarmy and actually kind of funny, but here was his question to Dear Abby. His question to Dear Abby was, should he tell her or not? Now, the radio show guys gave a bunch of hilarious answers. That's their job, is kind of the morning zoo thing. But I thought, as we were all three males, adult males at that, I thought it was an interesting kind of tech pop culture question with how the internet works anymore and how we can be a little wild when we were younger. Mr. Patrick, you don't necessarily have to put yourself in the dude's shoes, but what would your answer be to the guy? Should he tell her that he saw it, or should he just shut up, or should he lie, ad nauseum?
I think he should show it to her, see what her reaction is, and then say, can't we make one that's like 10 times better than this ourselves? That is exactly what he should do. He wasn't around at the time, so there's no jealousy, no hard feelings, nothing like that. He wasn't in the picture. And if she's into doing these things, maybe she'll do it once again, only better. So my advice, show it, see what happens, make a better one.
Of all the answers I could have expected, that was not what I was prepared for. But a good answer is all the same. Mr. Kehoe, should he tell her, not tell her, do the typical male shit, whatever, what's your answer?
Well, as surprising as Pat's answer was, it did make me wonder, you know, if this guy is, if she's done it once, she's probably already done it with him, too. But that being said, I probably would not tell her. unless I guess the circumstances have to be kind of spelled out a little bit more, but I'm sure this woman doesn't realize that it's out in the public domain for people to see. I guess it would come. It might depend on where he saw it and how easy it is to identify her as that person. I have to imagine if she found out, she would just be completely mortified the fact that it's out there. Unless she's cool like that, I don't know. But she did make it, I guess. But the oh boy, that, I mean, as far as Pat's totally right. He really shouldn't. I mean, he probably can't help but maybe feel a little bit embarrassed about it because it is his wife of a decade. But I mean, that's a time. I mean, it's a time in the past where he wasn't in the picture, and you know, the past. I don't think the past should be an obstacle in what you have today. But yeah, it's that's a touchy one. I don't think I would. I don't think he should tell her. Unless it's unavoidable for her to find out anyway, better to find out from her husband than some random person. But yeah, I think some more details on the circumstances might be a bit of a help there.
Well, I like Patrick's answer very much so. I would tell her because I'm a very honest and upfront person, and most of the girls that I've dated know that I, from time to time, enjoy adult cinema. Now, if they've specifically asked me not to, that is one thing I'm willing to forego as long as they're not complete jerks about other things. If they were, we wouldn't be dating for very long. But I am an honest person, and I would tell them. Now, I would wait to see what their reaction is before suggesting what Patrick's talking about. See, this is kind of a two-stage thing. See, if they're mortified and horrified like John's talking about, then you don't bring up making your own. What I found interesting about this, and most of the radio station guys, including the female in the group, said, no, don't tell him. It brings up what were you looking for, what were you looking at, and they're older than we are, so it kind of made sense that they're saying this because, you know, I think porn is still taboo to quite a number of people, which is silly to me. What I found interesting is how did he know she wasn't aware it was being filmed? And two, the dude that filmed it must have been pretty impressed with his filming skills, because 13 years ago he would have had to convert a VHS tape to make it digital. So my answer is going to be, and I brought this up, like I said, it's not video games, but I thought it was kind of an interesting one to do just for a little bit of fun. Because it is one of those things of, hell, what do you do? But I think I'm kind of going to go with Patrick's answer, too. I'm going to tell her the truth, mostly because that's the kind of person I am. And then if she doesn't seem too bothered about it, then I may broach the subject of doing a second one, only better. But it's easier for me to say that because of the three of us, I'm the only not married guy. So, there you go. Patrick, now that I've hit you with that riveting Dear Abby. What a thing to write about the Dear Abby too. Doesn't that sound like more like it should go to Penthouse?
Yeah, exactly. It should be in the
The original Dear Abby, as far as I know, is dead, and her sister, younger sister, is doing it now. If I'm wrong, sorry, Dear Abby. That sounds more like a Penthouse forum to me. That was the thing that's why I looked it up on the internet when I got home. It's like Dear Abby, some dude's writing Dear Abby about a sex tape? What? But it got stuck in my head all week, and I was kind of wondering. I asked my buddy last night when I was over at his house. He was like me. He said, I just tell her the truth. She gets pissed I'm looking at porn. She gets pissed I'm looking at porn. You know, but I kind of was curious what my other male cohorts thought. And, again, it's just internet pop culture enough that I thought I'd cram it in the show. All right, Pat.
How would she get pissed at looking at porn when she was making porn? But anyway.
Well, I don't know if you guys heard me, but according to the dude, she wasn't aware of it. How he knew that?
How did he know?
That sends home to me what I was saying about if she did it before, maybe she'd do it again. But if she didn't know about it, that's a whole.
Yeah, but how does he know?
He's assuming.
She didn't know about it.
Yeah,
he's guessing for his own sanity and shame.
Oh, that's true too. That's true too.
He's assuming. Like you said, yeah, that she knew about it. Either or didn't know about it, yep.
The poor bastard has now found six more with six different...
Did you guys ever watch the British version of the show Coupling? Or the original
show?
It's good entertainment. I don't think they meant it for the kind of entertainment I take it as, though. It's funny. Anyways, Patrick, save us.
Okay, where are we doing now? Well, back to the world of video games and such. You can find WonderPod online on Facebook. You can send us a friend request or check out our profile, WonderPod Online. Three names. That's how they wanted us to do it, so that's how we did it. Check us out. Send us a friend request. We got some updates on there. It's become less popular to ask us questions, but hey, ask us a question and we'll answer it on the podcast. Where else? Of course, on WonderPodOnline.com is our website, our hub place where you can get the MP3 of this very show. Maybe that's where you found us. If not, check out WonderPodOnline.com. We have other things on there aside from the show. There's other podcasts that appear. There's all sorts of articles, wrestling stuff, all sorts of stuff. If you didn't get us on WonderPodOnline.com, you must have found us on iTunes. Subscribe. It's easy. Rate us. Tell us you hate us. Tell us you love us. It doesn't matter. We're on iTunes and also on Apple TV, even though it's audio. It's on Apple TV. Aside from that, I'm sure there's a few YouTube videos hanging around the place. Check us out on YouTube. Just check in WonderPod or WonderPod Online. I don't know. I'm tiring here. I can't think of anything else. I do know that Bruce McGee could tell you our email address. What is it, Bruce?
It is WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. If you're into Twitter or-ing, and I say that just to be a jackass, you can find us at WonderPodOnline, where you can find me at O-R-I-G-I-M, and you can find John at...
at J-O-N-K-E-H-O-E, at John Kehoe.
There you go. Covered Twitter, covered Facebook, covered everything else. That means we're out of here, which I am, people. See ya during episode 81. See ya.
Cheers.
Goodbye.
God, that was the most horrible exit I've ever done. I've been doing this for way too long now.